This is 10 Minutes of Science, a Women in Ophthalmology initiative supported by Johnson & Johnson. We have invited ophthalmologists who are leaders in their field to discuss a journal article of their choice. My name is Robin Troutbeck. I'd like to introduce Dr. Diana Conrad. She is currently the director of the uveitis service at the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital, the only specialty uveitis service in Queensland. She is Deputy Director of Ophthalmology at the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital and in private practice at the Wesley Hospital. Welcome, Diana.
Thanks very much, Robin. It is great to be here and thanks for inviting me along.
Could you start by telling us the name of your article and why you've chosen it?
I certainly could. So the paper that I read is called Rituximab for Non-Infectious Uveitis and Scleritis. And it's a review paper. And the reason I chose it is because I noticed that in clinical practice, we're using rituximab increasingly for a wide range of refractory inflammatory eye conditions. And yes, I really wanted to improve my understanding of other people's clinical experience. There still aren't a lot of patients who've been treated with rituximab for inflammatory eye disease. So I was really pleased to read a review article where they put together 229 patients who've been treated with rituximab up until December 2020. And the other reason I was interested because rituximab has recently come off patent, so it's become much cheaper. So our high-cost drug committee is very happy to give us access to rituximab, whereas they are a little bit more resistant to give us access to some other biologics. So I thought it was time that I updated my understanding of other people's clinical experience in this area.
Excellent. So you started telling us a little bit about the article. What was the design of the study? And just tell us a bit about what they did or how they conducted it.
So it's a review article. And what they did was they just went through Medline and other databases, PubMed, and searched for uveitis and rituximab. So this paper actually covers not refractory, non-infectious uveitis, refractory, yes, non-infective scleritis and rituximab. And then they've done another paper, a sort of a partner paper that looks at orbital inflammatory disease and rituximab. So they looked at all cases that have been reported of refractory, non-infective uveitis and scleritis treated with rituximab up until December 2020 and put together a list of 229 cases.
And were these patients, Diana, being treated with rituximab, were they treatment naive patients or
no,
had they already tried? Okay.
Almost all second and third line. Very few, one or two that were first line, but mostly, and it is mostly clinically second and third line.
And in a lot of uveitis trials, it's often quite hard to gain numbers. So they often lump a whole lot of conditions into the same area, which it sounds like what they did, they included all causes of non-infectious posterior uveitis. Is that right? Did they have any breakdown of conditions or?
They did, and they said, and it ended up being the most difficult to treat conditions were the ones that ended up,
yes,
being tried with rituximab. So they broke it down into autoimmune retinopathy and GIS-associated uveitis and BKH and GPA were the biggest groups, and then there was another group, sort of all of the others. But yes, paraneoplastic retinopathies as well, Karama.
And were there general trends, did different conditions have different responses to the rituximab?
Well, very surprisingly, considering these were all refractory cases who had failed, yes, first line, second line therapy, that about 89% of the total group had a response to rituximab, which is pretty impressive when you consider these,
yep,
people have been treatment resistant to our other major drugs.
And that includes the scleritis patients as well.
Correct. So the scleritis patients did even better. It was over 90% of the refractory scleritis patients that responded to rituximab.
Okay. So did they make any conclusions about rituximab in general? I mean, it sounds like when you've got these patients with severe disease that have already failed multiple treatments, to have that level of success is amazing, really.
I think that's possibly one of the major conclusions. I think they were quite,
yep,
surprised that the results were as good as they were, because yes, this was a difficult patient group, and they did surprisingly well with very little in the way of side effects. So yeah. Most patients didn't get to, so the most common side effects were transfusion associated side effects. So there were a few of those, but apart from that, very little in the way of side effects. Well, there was one patient in the orbital group who had a slight case of death from a terrible viral pneumonitis they got after the rituximab. But apart from that, the side effects were very few.
And actually, that was a question I meant to ask you before. How do they give? How did they give the rituximab? Some people may not be familiar with it.
It's a very good question. So I was unaware that there were these range of different dosing methods. So more than 50% of them had what they call the rheumatological dosing, which is a gram of rituximab, two doses given 14 days apart. So 50% of them were treated that way. And then there's the Foster protocol, which is, I think, 375 milligrams per square meter given every week for 8 weeks, and the oncological protocol, which is the same dose but given once a week for 4 weeks. So they were the three main protocols, and then there were some other random ones that were sort of other. So, yes, it's a bit of a confused area. And they did say that they would have liked to have compared the different dosing regimens, but the way they collected the data from the papers, it wasn't possible to do that. But that obviously is something that should be looked at, although I think most people are moving towards the rheumatological protocol because it's easier.
Yep. Did you get anything else from the article? Was there anything else, do you think, that's important to share?
Well, I think one of the most important things is we have to be terribly careful that we, with the increasing availability and use of rituximab in such a wide range of conditions, we have to be very careful we don't use it for possibly infective disease. Because that was the other thing that prompted me to read this article, because I did have a patient this week who had a posterior uveitis that looked infective, who had been treated with rituximab, was getting significantly worse. And you can't undo it. It's going to be there for 6 months. So I think that's a very important thing for us all to remember, that you must exclude infection before you give it. And then the other very important thing is that the biosimilars have started to be approved. So there's two biosimilars that are already approved in Australia for rituximab, and there's another four or five that are coming. So we're going to be using this more and more.
Because that's certainly been a limitation cost to a lot of small hospitals.
Sure, but it is already, as it's so just for PBS now, so it's available privately and it's actually not that expensive. And the biosimilars are going to make it even cheaper. So yes, it's going to be much more available. You're absolutely right. So it's something I think we all need to be more aware of, the upside as well as the downside.
In COVID, in Queensland, where you're working, you haven't had to be as worried about COVID as us in the southern states.
We have a COVID-free zone.
You have a COVID-free zone, exactly. At the moment, you should all go and be vaccinated. But it's something that we've been actively avoiding, rituximab, at the moment because of COVID.
Yes, of course,
because the immunisations. Well, we've been avoiding it just because people, if you get COVID, if you've had rituximab, your outcome is significantly worse.
Yes. And yes, exactly. We don't have that issue just yet.
Yeah. Are you using it frequently for your patients? Like, how are you using rituximab in your practice?
Well, increasingly. So I run a combined clinic with an adult rheumatologist at the public hospital, as well as have a couple of close relationships with pediatric rheumatologists. And we are using it increasingly for orbital disease, certainly for refractory scleritis. We're using it much. In this paper, the average duration before people ended up with rituximab was 3 years. And I think that used to be the case, you try everything. Whereas now I think it's more, you know, if you're not winning within 2 or 3 months, we'll give rituximab a try. So we certainly have been using it much more readily, probably because of the reduction in the cost and because the results are good and people tolerate it well. So, yes, using it much more busier than last year.
Are you finding that that improvement is usually sustained? Like, we would give the treatment, you know, two treatments a fortnight apart and then see how you go type of thing. Are you finding that people in general are okay, or are they requiring further treatment down the line?
That's interesting, isn't it? So some people seem to need it every 6 months. Some people seem to go longer than that. I've had a couple of people who've had one treatment and the disease has not come back so far. So that's been very good. So I think it just varies clinically and you just have to run with what happens.
So would you recommend, say, for the general ophthalmologist, if they have a patient who they'd be managing who they felt needed rituximab, you'd recommend referring to a clinic like your own where you have access to rheumatologists and a physician on hand. I wouldn't be suggesting people go ahead and, yes.
Yeah, I think this is a great example of inflammatory disease that's best managed in combination with the general physician in the same room. You know, you really need to be there with the patient to talk about the pros and cons. And, that seems to work a lot better. So, yes, absolutely. We would be very keen to help out in that situation for any referring practitioner.
Excellent.
Thanks very much, Robin. I think it's fantastic that Women in Ophthalmology have started this series, and it's very kind of you to invite me to come along. It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks, Diana.
Thank you for joining us today on 10 Minutes of Science. See you next time.